In Cleveland, tourists are flocking to an unlikely attraction. It's an old house in a working-class neighborhood. It was the stage for a low-budget movie shot 25 years ago, a Christmas movie that still has an enthusiastic following. From member station WKSU, ML Schultze sent this story.
Overlooking the steel mills on Cleveland's west side is a narrow two-story frame house on a narrow inner-city lot that, these days, rivals the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a tourist draw.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Director Bob Clark started the house on its way to icon status when he filmed large parts of A Christmas Story in Cleveland 25 years ago. The house is now A Christmas Story House and Museum, overseen by Executive Director Steve Sedlecki and visited by 70,000 people over the last 4 years. Given all that attention, Sedlecki says it's hard to believe the $4 million picture flopped back in 1983.
It basically ran for a few weeks and got pulled from the theaters before Christmas. Christmas movie being pulled before Christmas, it's not a good sign.
Cleveland has claimed A Christmas Story as its own, though its only reference in the movie is Cleveland Street. The movie's supposed to be set in Indiana, but fans know better. They recognize Cleveland's public square and Higbee's department store, and they know the house on West 11th Street, where filmmakers recorded Ralphie Parker's quest for a Red Ryder BB gun. Sisters-in-law Jenny and Carrie Davis drove 2 hours to the house from Cardington, Ohio. They're posing next to a fragile crate with a leg lamp peeking out. It's a movie sight gag that hints at just how many people really do watch the 24-hour Christmas Story marathon on cable.
Everybody growing up wants some toy that they don't think they're going to get, and it's a great surprise when they get it, and everyone's dad says things they shouldn't and gets busted
yes.
doing that, and everyone has a holiday that just is a mess, and it's just one of those things that everyone in some way can relate to.
More than 4,000 people attended this year's Christmas Story convention on Thanksgiving weekend, and about 1,000 line up each weekend now to tour the house and see life imitate shtick. Danielle Kurinski is crawling out from under the kitchen sink.
After the oh fudge scene that Ralphie said the big word, Randy climbed under the sink because he thought Daddy was going to kill Ralphie. So you can't pass up the photo op.
Kurinski and friend Heidi Webb came from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and they brought their own props.
Well, she's got the bunny ears for the top of the steps when it came down as the deranged Easter bunny, and we have the glasses. We actually have an eyeball in case we happen to shoot our eyeball out. We have a BB gun, but we weren't sure we were allowed to bring it here.
Brian Jones opened the Christmas Story house 4 years ago. He already was making money off A Christmas Story by selling plastic leg lamps. And the lamps, fishnet stockinged and high-heeled, are ubiquitous in Cleveland.
We have in the actual full-size legs themselves, the nightlight, strings of lights, ornaments. You can get an inflatable one that you can plug into your front yard.
Fabian and Jenny Sandoval put the dog in the car and drove to Cleveland from Falls Church, Virginia, to buy a lamp. And though coworkers thought they were crazy, they also sent along shopping lists.
The decoder pin, the soap, and we need some of the ornaments and the nightlight, so we have to load up.
Christmas Story tourism dollars in Cleveland extend beyond the house. They include two official A Christmas Story House Chinese restaurants. The Cleveland Playhouse has just finished its 100th performance of the play, and a local hotel promotes weekend packages that include goodie bags of Ovaltine and Lifebuoy soap. Cleveland's Christmas Story pitch went even further this year. A Pennsylvania family bid $5,200 on eBay. What'd they win? The chance to spend Christmas Eve and Christmas Day at the house the movie made famous. For NPR News, I'm ML Schultze.
Just a week before her first performance in Washington, D.C., the young star of a new production of West Side Story was slightly fuzzy on some famous lyrics.
I feel pretty and witty and bright.
To be fair, there was no warning she'd be asked to sing. And more important, NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg reports, there's no reason this singer should know the lyrics.
No reason, because in this revival of West Side Story, 21-year-old Josefina Scaglione does Maria's song this way.
Hoy me siento tan hermosa, tan preciosa que puedo volar. Y no hay diosa en el mundo que me va a alcanzar.
This revival is bilingual. The romance of Romeo and Juliet, told against a background of gang warfare, pits the Puerto Rican Sharks against white juvenile delinquent Jets. In the new version, the Jets speak and sing in English, the Sharks in Spanish, with English surtitles.
I don't think there's any point in doing a revival unless you have a really fresh approach.
Arthur Lawrence wrote the book for the original West Side Story. Now he's directing the revival. The gangs still sing and dance their hatreds and frustrations on the raw pavements of New York. But Lawrence has rethought every character he created. In 1957, Lively Anita sang in English. This is the original cast album. And though she's Puerto Rican, she still does in this new production.
I realized that Anita, who wants to be American, would speak English. She would insist on it.
But Anita's lover, Bernardo, leader of the Sharks and proud Puerto Rican, would only speak Spanish.
But after Bernardo was killed, Anita won't speak English. She goes back to Spanish.
Tengo un amor sin igual.
And in Spanish, Maria mourns her brother Bernardo's death as she affirms her love for his non-Puerto Rican killer.
Lo adoro de más, no es como los demás. Yo lo sé.
Josefina Scaglione, the show's lovely Maria, is Argentine, but she and the all-Hispanic Sharks had to work on their Spanish accent.
I speak Spanish, but I have to learn to speak it the way a Puerto Rican would speak it. So, for example, I said llevar, that is to take something, and Puerto Ricans said llevar, not sh. But do.
She, Officer Kropke, we're very upset. We never had the love that every child ought to get.
Another change, Arthur Lawrence has reframed this song, a hilarious vaudeville number in the original, in this grittier West Side Story. After two of their friends are killed, the Jets' take on Officer Kropke is darker.
Some of them are disgusted by it, but some of them, it's their defiance. And I don't know how funny it is, and I don't care. But it's another expression of the kids who understand what society thinks of them.
Even though they don't speak Spanish, the Jets understand what the Sharks think of them. Cody Green, who plays the Jets' leader, Riff, says the language barrier adds to the friction.
If you don't understand what's being said, it sort of gets a rise out of you. It creates this tension between the two gangs because they don't understand each other. They don't speak the same language.
With music by Leonard Bernstein, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, and choreography by Jerome Robbins, West Side Story had its world premiere at the very same theater where this revival opens, the National in Washington, D.C. Now, a 51-year-old musical runs the risk of being dated. But Arthur Lawrence says some things never change. Young people still join gangs.
Kids just kill each other.
What has changed, Lawrence feels, is theater, as it reflects changes in society's values.
In 57, those kids were portrayed as lovable little thugs. Not in this version.
The actors know West Side Story from the movie version, but they realize they are being directed by a theatrical legend. Arthur Lawrence was not only part of the team that created West Side Story, he also wrote Gypsy and novels that became the films The Way We Were and The Turning Point. He was in his 70s when most of this cast were born, including his Maria and Riff.
He's so nice. He's such a nice person.
He's such
that
a wonderful
he makes
person.
It, like,
makes you feel so comfortable.
So comfortable.
And if we knew any more, we would be, it would make us nervous probably. Uh-huh, but because we didn't bear witness to everything he's accomplished, we just sort of you can look at it on paper, but to understand the grandeur of it is impossible. So we're really lucky. And
we're so lucky.
Yeah.
Director Arthur Lawrence feels lucky, too. At the age of 91, he's excited by the chance to reset his venerable creation. Theater has to be exciting, Arthur Lawrence says. Otherwise, what's the point?
I'm tired of leaving at the intermission. You know, make me stay in my seat.
The revival of West Side Story has its first performance at Washington's National Theater tonight and runs through January 17th, then Broadway. It's a good bet audiences and director Lawrence will remain in their seats. Cell phones off for the duration. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
That was a bit of the orchestra rehearsing for tonight's opening in Washington, D.C. At NPR.org, you can get a look at some of the cast members. You can also hear a 50th anniversary celebration of West Side Story. And from NPR West, this is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. Thank you.